What is an expert? Take a second or a few seconds to think about what an expert is. I mean, from a young age, we are indoctrinated to buy into what an expert has to say, whether it be a police officer, whether it be a scientist, a medical doctor, a teacher. We are presented this script that experts know everything and we should listen and follow the experts. Well, I'm not here to tell you that we shouldn't listen to experts. I'm just questioning, where do they get their knowledge from? What makes them authoritative? And should we always listen to the experts? And when should we not listen to an expert? Because really, when it comes down to it, experts are just like you and I. They are human beings susceptible to the same cognitive biases that we are all plagued with. They don't possess anything different than you and I do, except for advanced information in a specific subject matter, and it's not always 100%. So basically, experts are just like you and I, as I've said, with just a little bit more information that makes them more knowledgeable than us, because I certainly don't want to be operating on myself. I don't know about you, but if I have if my appendix bursts, I don't want to be doing an operation on my own appendix, because I don't know what I'm doing, and nor would I want to do it on a family member. I mean, I don't know. Maybe some people would want to do that. So hold on to your hats, folks, because in today's episode, we're going to descend into this rabbit hole of expertise and dissect the elusive world of experts. Are they gods or mortals? And when should you listen to them, if ever? Welcome to Life Unscripted, the podcast that just hits you with the hard truth that life has no script and everything you've been taught is an illusion. I'm Alan Stafford, your host. Join me in this episode as we break down what experts are and whether we should listen to them or not. Okay. Welcome, folks. Look, I'm probably going to get myself in a little bit of trouble here with the so-called experts, especially the self-proclaimed experts. Those are my favorite. But really, the point of this whole podcast is to break down what an expert is and that we shouldn't always have to take their word for what they say, because they are human like us. Despite what they might think themselves, an expert is no different than you and I, with just a little bit more training in whatever subject matter they're professing to be an expert in. As I will show you and demonstrate, experts have been wrong before, and they will be wrong again. But it isn't an episode to bash expertise. What I'm trying to do is enlighten your mind so that you understand when you should take the advice of an expert and when you should question that. And I'm going to teach you how to question an expert and verify the information. Because for all intents and purposes, we're all experts. Because really, expert comes from the word, or from the Latin word, ex, which means out of, per to try. Per is to try or risk. So in essence, an expert is somebody who's tried and risked, and out of that has gained knowledge. So in essence, we've all tried something, right? And risked something. Heck, we're living life. We're trying to live life. We're all experts at life, right? And no, seriously, think about it. We are life experts. You can become a life coach if you want to. There's nothing that says you cannot do that. Don't buy into the fake credentials that institutionalized education wants to sell you. And I'm not against institutionalized education, but I'm just telling you, a lot of this is in the mindset. So don't buy into that necessarily. You are a life expert. Okay, we're moving on before I irritate too many people. So basically, it comes down to this here, folks. Experts are human. I know you didn't know that. I know you're probably like questioning. You're probably in disbelief right now that I even made that statement. You're like, how can Alan make that statement that experts are human? I thought they were gods, but they're not. They're prone to the same cognitive biases as anyone else. Think about it. What makes someone better than the other person? It doesn't really make, nobody's better than anybody. It really comes down to how much training that person has. And that person still is subject to biases. They are swayed in many different reasons cognitively, which can affect their decision-making, thus affect their expert advice, okay? So before we even get into all of this here, I want to be able to explain to you what a cognitive bias is so that you don't just look to me and say, oh, that makes sense, when it really doesn't make sense at all. Okay, because I'm not an expert. I'm just somebody who does a lot of reading in psychology and human behavior and neuroscience so that I can better understand our own behavior as humans in our own realities and, you know, fictional realities and things that are made up and that we follow blindly for no reason. Cognitive biases lead to illogical inferences about people and situations, meaning they're often based on incomplete information or incorrect assumptions. How many times, and I know you do this because I do this too, someone asks you a question, you don't want to look stupid, you make up an answer, or you give an answer which you think you're right, but you're not 100% right, okay? So that's incomplete information, and sometimes you're making an incorrect assumption. We see that a lot about politics these days. People don't know the backstory of anything, and they just make an assumption. Those are all biases, and experts do the same thing. And here's another thing about biases. They take advantage of the brain's heuristics, which means their mental shortcut. So we have these mental shortcuts that are part of our human nature. It's part of our evolution so that we can survive out in the wild. If you see, for example, out, you're in the desert or the jungles, and you're an early human and you see a bush rustling, your heuristics, the shortcut is going to be, that's danger, run, get out of here. I don't want to get eaten, okay? So we still maintain that in our thinking, and these heuristics that we use to make our decisions often lead to errors in judgment. So basically, it comes down to this here. Cognitive biases are basically going to be simplified ways of synthesizing or breaking down complex processes, information processing in the brain. And there's a lot of biases, a lot of fallacies in thinking, in argumentation. We'll get into some of those and especially how they impact. But our brain basically attempts, as I said, to simplify complex processes of information so that we can save mental resources. And oftentimes we're not right. And experts are the same thing. Even though an expert might have done it over and over and over again to learn something, they're not always correct. They're still subject to these biases. And the reason they're subject to these biases is because cognitive biases are influenced by emotions, social influence, your social gathering around you, and any inherent limitations in our information processing capacity. So if we have limitations in processing our information for whatever reason, that also impacts our decision-making. So let me say this again. Cognitive biases are influenced by our emotions, social influence, the people around us that influence us, and they are impacted by the inherent limitations of our own information processing capacity. So I want to give you a quick example. Let's say you are an expert in strategic military operations, and you're on the American side, U.S. side. We are fighting a war with Russia. And let's say, for example, a top military leader sleeps and falls in love with a Russian woman. He is now socially influenced by his emotions, romantic connection to this woman. Anything is possible in his judgment. Any error is possible at this point, is what I'm trying to say to you. So experts fall under the same category as we all do, okay? So we can take it a step further. We can just simply blanket statement and say that experts are subjected to all the biases which everybody on this planet are subject to. And that's a true statement. But there's a German neuroscientist, Ethel Dröhr, who's done research on cognitive biases in expert decision making. He's actually identified 6 fallacies that hinder a fair assessment of expert conclusions. I mean, these are 6 fallacies, cognitive biases, that are very specific to how experts make decisions, that impact their decisions. Let's quickly go through Dröhr's fallacies so we have a foundation of biases that impact the decision-making of experts and their outcomes. The ethical issues fallacy. Basically, this fallacy is the belief that biases are a matter of personal integrity and only affect corrupt or unscrupulous individuals. It incorrectly assumes that biases are exclusively ethical problems rather than cognitive ones. So what does that mean? So basically, the ethical issues fallacy is about the individual who thinks they're the expert, but that their decisions are not impacted by any fallacy or bias, because that is left to unscrupulous, nefarious, bad characters, you know, individuals. But unfortunately for them, it's a cognitive problem, not a bad person problem. So again, it comes back to the brain, the thinking. The bad apples fallacy. So this is an interesting fallacy in that it suggests that biases occur only to people due to incompetence and only happens to experts who do not know how to do their job properly. How many times have you heard that where someone says, oh, they don't know how to do their job, or they don't know what they're doing, or they don't know what they're talking about? And they're the self-proclaimed experts, or they think they've been ordained an expert by some institution. But in reality, that the bad apples fallacy fails to recognize the expert accusing the other expert, so to speak, of not knowing how to do their job. So therefore, what they're saying should be voided. The problem with that kind of thinking is that the person or the individual or the so-called expert calling out the other person that they don't know their job, they fail to recognize that even highly competent experts can be affected by biases. So in other words, I can be out there and say, oh, so-and-so doesn't know what he's talking about. He doesn't know how to do his job properly anyway. Look at it. He made a mistake. And I'm going to make the assumption that because he doesn't know how to do his job, he's not an expert. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Thus, I do. However, the case is that biases impact everybody, regardless of level of expertise. And that's the bad apples fallacy. I hope I explained that to you correctly. I'm going to have all these on my show notes on my website, alanstafford.com. So you can always go over there, look under podcasts, and then show notes, and then you'll see I'll have this whole list for you. Then there's the expert immunity fallacy, which is the fallacy that basically states experts are impartial and not affected by biases because they are competent at their jobs. So we're just going to assume that they're competent because they're experts. And again, this fallacy overlooks the fact that biases can impact anyone, regardless of their level of expertise. Do we see a theme going here, a trend in how these biases in decision-making work, that basically the leader doesn't think they're fallible because they're the expert, but everyone else doesn't know what they're talking about, and therefore they're not the expert. But yet, when in reality, the bias affects everybody, it doesn't just affect them or the other person. And then Drawer's fourth identified decision-making fallacy is a technological protection fallacy. This is the assumption that the use of technology, instrumentation, automation, or artificial intelligence can guarantee protection from human biases. And here's the funny part, though. If you're an expert making the assumption that AI or some sort of technology is infallible, think about this for a second. Isn't technology and AI created by man who's fallible himself? I mean, think about it. So the AI is only as good as the human inputting the information, and that human is subject to biases. So again, that doesn't pan out either for experts. You have the bias blind spot fallacy, and this is one of my favorites. I'll tell you why. Because this fallacy is of the assumption that while other experts may be affected by bias, your own judgment is not subject to the same biases. Like, oh, they're biased on that side of the newsroom, but us, we're not biased. That's the bias blind spot fallacy. I like that one. And that one you see a lot. That one's real evident when someone comes out and says to you, yeah, they're biased. You know what the underlying assumption there is? Is that I'm not biased, but they're biased. So you should listen to me and discount what they have to say. And basically, the bias blind spot fallacy is really a result of one's own lack of awareness or self-awareness regarding their own vulnerabilities to bias. You know, people don't like to admit that they're wrong. They don't want to admit that they've biased. You'll hear people, I'm not biased, I don't judge, blah, blah, blah. None of that is true, folks. You're not going to escape that. When I hear that, the first thing that goes up, red flag, they're starting to, gaslight me or trying to BS me. And that should be the same thing that goes up with you. A traffic light should go up in your head, red light, stop. Let's question this. Are they really unbiased? Because that's impossible. Are they really lack of judgment? That's impossible. You know, these thoughts should be going through your mind. And then finally, Drawer's final identified fallacy for expert decision making or cognitive biases in expert decision making is the illusion of control fallacy. And this is an incorrect belief that one can control and manage all aspects of their decision making process to eliminate bias. Basically, it underestimates the subtle ways in which biases can influence judgment. Sometimes, and a lot of times, people are not aware of the biases that impact their judgment, their decision making. This is some of this stuff is subconscious, going on behind the scenes of your conscious mind. So after going through the fallacies, and especially the six specific fallacies that Dror's research dug up on expert decision making, I guess the question is, should we even listen to experts? And if so, when should we listen to them? I'll tell you what, we'll find out when we come back. Okay, so should you listen to an expert? Well, you know, here's the thing. I don't want you to think I'm bashing experts. I'm not. What I'm simply doing is trying to help you better understand and think clearer and be able to question experts so that you can get a better decision for yourself or make a better decision or choice for yourself, regardless of whether it's medical or religious even or scientific, mechanical, whatever the reason is that you're going to go to somebody who possesses more knowledge than you in that subject matter, that you know how to question them. And that you understand that they're subject to the same biases as everyone else is, and only what makes them an expert is that the fact that they spent some time studying a lot more or a little bit more than what you already know on the subject. So when do we listen to expertise? I also want to share with you a story, and this is where I'm torn. I believe in doctors, but I don't believe in doctors at the same time. Even though they spent many years in medical school, they're subject to the same biases as we are, and they make poor decisions from time to time. Let me give you a story here. My own father, about a year ago, I get a call saying that he has a week left to die. He has a hiatal hernia, and I'm not going to get into the whole medical history of it, but basically the doctor says he has less than a week to die before he aspirates and basically can't breathe on his own anymore. To make a long story short, in that sense, he didn't die after a week. The doctor was adamant. No matter how often we ask the doctor, are you still sure? And he says, yes, I'm absolutely sure. As it turns out, fast forward over a year later. Okay, now we're over a year later. My dad slips and falls going out to his truck. Mind you, he's 79 years old. He's going out to his truck. He slips and falls and again crushes his chest, ends up in the hospital, the emergency room, intensive care. And the doctor in there, they were prepping me, saying that basically, if they pull the tube that he was intubated, if they pulled the breathing tube, that he would die. He can't breathe on his own. And so I was left to have to make that decision. But as it turned out, my father came too, and he was able to sign language saying he did not want the tube pulled, which is probably a good thing because fast forward 4 months later, after the doctor said he only had a week to live then, he's still alive and kicking without a tube in his throat. So my point is, the doctors don't know everything. Just like the lawyers don't know everything. There are lawyers who lose cases. There are doctors who lose patients, who misdiagnose. There are crisis communicators who fail at their job, and they're the so-called expert. Take, for instance, the wildfire that happened on Maui in Hawaii back in 2023, last year. Here you had multiple fires, weather conditions that exacerbated the fires that grew them together, and eventually leading down to Lahaina, the little town of Lahaina on the coast there, killing over 100 people. The takeaway from this here is the experts failed to initiate an early warning system, as well as residents claiming they heard no information about what to do or where to go. And these are your experts, folks. I mean, what are they doing inside their expert office? I mean, are they sitting there playing backgammon all day long? No, they're in there probably not making right decisions. They don't know what to do because this is probably a situation that's never occurred before. So their expertise is limited to what they've done or have studied in the past, but nothing of this magnitude. So again, leads people to think that experts will know every situation when they really don't know every situation. But that's not to say that we don't need expert advice. And now you're probably confused. It's like, what is he saying? Is he saying don't listen to experts, or is he saying listen to experts? What I'm telling you is to approach, and we'll get into this here in a little bit, about how to question experts and what to look for. But right now, I'm just giving you some background information on what an expert is, and that they are fallible just like everybody else, and that the only thing that makes them an expert is the extra knowledge that they have, and they're not always right. They don't always make good, sound decisions because their decisions are plagued by biases, which are driven by emotion and societal pressure or influences. But having said that, when do we want to listen to an expert? When they have specialized knowledge. I'm not going to go to medical school so I can operate on myself or a family member. So I'm going to defer to a doctor, but I'm also going to question the doctor. But expert advice is essential, or you should be listening to experts where they possess specialized knowledge. I mean, in critical fields that require specialized knowledge beyond basically the grasp of just the average layperson. And I'm talking medical, legal, and advanced scientific research. Again, it doesn't mean that they're right when they speak all the time. It just means that they have more advanced knowledge than you do, and you probably want to take into consideration what they're saying, but then again, always verify the facts. When I talk about specialized knowledge, I'm talking about complex decision-making, again, like experts in the medical field that are making medical diagnosis. Well, I don't know about the doctors that diagnose, and it's two separate doctors. It's not the same one that diagnosed my dad. Maybe they need to go back to medical school. Maybe they just looked at him as an old man who smoked his whole life and realized, he's done. I mean, that could be it. They could have had biases against a smoker. He used to be a smoker. So, I mean, they could have had a bias against that, thinking, I've seen this case before. I'm going to base it on the last case I had, even though not two people are alike. I'm just going to say he's goner. So, I mean, it could be a variable of reasons why they made that decision. But again, it was a poor decision, and it comes from experts. And here's one I grapple with from time to time. Listening to experts when they're making policy and practice, like in public health. I mean, we saw that with COVID, all the experts. We as the public was thrashed back and forth on what to do, what not to do. Talk about the chaos in decision-making. One side wanting to stick bleach inside of you, the other side wanting to keep you inside all the time. Who knew what to do? I mean, we were all going through this together. The experts were trying their best, and yet I believe they failed many people. But now we know if we have that same scenario, what we should do. We didn't know it then because we were looking at something from 100 years ago, you know, the first flu outbreak. But times have changed. People are different. The population's greater. The economy's different. So you can't take that information and say, everybody quarantined, you should do it too, because it tanks the economy. And I'm not saying that's the wrong thing or the right thing to do because I don't know. But what I'm telling you is the experts don't always have the answer either. So I guess it comes down to walking a fine line between accepting what the expert says and then verifying it. Now, there are people who just flat out discount or ignore what the expert says. There are people that I know personally that think doctors are wackos, that they don't know what they're talking about. And yet they're the ones who think they know what they're talking about because they do some research on YouTube videos or they do some research on some website, Bob's Medical Advice. And then they come up with this information and they go, the doctor doesn't know what he's talking about because I'm using all kinds of supplements and stuff. And I had cancer and I cured cancer when they never even had the cancer or it's not even verifiable. So you have that side of the spectrum too. And that's another extreme. So there's one side where you just don't believe anybody and think they're all wackos and you're the smart one, or you're the other side where you're just going to believe every expert and never question it. And folks, you need to be somewhere in the middle. If you want to be smart about it, you need to be somewhere in the middle and you need to be questioning when the experts give you advice. So as an example, in medical advice, get a second, third, or fourth opinion. It's customary to get a second opinion, once you agree. Third opinion even, fine. Hey, if you want to go all out, get a fourth opinion. But I'd say throw in a fifth so you have an odd number. So it could be 3-2, you know, and you go, I'll take the majority there on that operation. Thank you. Yeah, I don't know if it works that way, but at least you get differing opinions. So I hope I've made myself clear in the sense of when you should seek out an expert. And that is, again, when they have specialized knowledge, but it doesn't mean to take their word at heart. It doesn't mean discount it either right away. It just means listen to what they have to say. They have the background in that information, but get another opinion on their expertise, regardless of whether it's an auto mechanic, a lawyer, because some lawyers will say, yeah, you can sue them. The other one will say, no, you can't sue them. Same thing with a doctor. Yeah, we can operate. No, we can't operate, you know, type of thing. So far we've discussed experts and how they make mistakes yet possess advanced knowledge on subject matter that most of us do not have. So far we've talked about experts. They're subject to cognitive biases like everybody else. They make mistakes, but we do need to defer to them in certain situations, such as that specialized knowledge. But again, we want to make sure that we're always on guard and questioning the experts and not just taking their word for it, because sometimes, you know, they may be having a bad day. I don't know. Or they may just not be up on the latest research or techniques or whatever might be going on in their field and make a bad decision. They may be just having a heck of a week. Maybe they got in a fight with their wife or their spouse or husband or whatever they are. And so the takeaway I want you to have from this segment here is, you know, when we approach expert advice, we need to do so with caution. Okay, just don't take it as that's the gospel. And even you shouldn't take the gospel as the gospel. And when we decide to take expert's advice, as I said, we need to approach it with caution. And there are a few ways that we can do that. So what we want to do is approach it with skepticism and critical thinking. We want to evaluate expert opinions with both of these, skepticism and critical thinking skills. We want to question their assumptions. So if we're skeptical, it encourages us to question the underlying assumption behind their opinion, the expert's opinion. Our skepticism allows us to approach the topic critically, helping us uncover any potential biases or flaws in their reasoning. I mean, there's always flaws in every reasoning. And so when we uncover these flaws, when we're skeptical, we uncover these flaws, it basically leads to a deeper understanding of the issue that they're discussing or that the issue at hand, whatever that issue might be, whether it be medical, scientific, political, religious. I mean, now, religion set aside, that's a belief system. You know, if you want to believe in that, go for it. That's all on you, and I have no problem with that. But if you're going to say that that is the truth, then now we're going to have to argue. If you're going to say that the pastor's an expert and he's saying it's the truth, now we're going to have a discussion about that because I have a different opinion, a differing view on this stuff. And a reason a lot of people don't question experts is because it requires evaluating the evidence. You have to actually do a little bit of digging yourself. You have to do a little bit of the work. You have to do a little bit of the work yourself. And as a result, it's time consuming and it hurts your brain, folks. It does. In any given day, our brain, our 3-pound brain, which is the average weight for the brain, processes about 70,000 thoughts. 70,000 thoughts each day using over 100 billion neurons that connect more than 500 trillion points through our synapses in our brain. They travel 300 miles an hour. That exhausts people, folks. So the more you think, the more tired and exhausted your brain gets. Have you ever come home from work and you're just exhausted? You want to sit down and have a beer or a cup of coffee? Well, maybe not a coffee, a tea, a drink, something. Watch some boob tube TV, pointless TV reality show and just go to bed or really do nothing. Well, that's probably because you've been thinking all day long and you need to shut yourself down. So that's the reason why people have a hard time evaluating, because they have to spend that time thinking. They have to spend the time researching and then the exhaustive journey of actually going through the thought process of trying to figure things out. So when you approach an expert, and I say approach them with skepticism and critical thinking, evaluating evidence is time consuming. But if you really want to get to the bottom of it, are they telling you the truth? Do they know what they're talking about? Is there another approach, another solution instead of what they're offering? You're going to need to dig a little deeper, folks. And being a skeptic doesn't mean necessarily being someone who just completely rejects everything. It's more of an approach to questioning, to verifying, because skepticism aids in identifying and basically mitigating personal and professional biases in all expert reasoning. It recognizes these biases as crucial for maintaining objectivity and making those informed decisions. So skepticism, being a skeptic, is good when you're questioning experts or questioning anything for that matter. I mean, I'm a skeptic. Sometimes I'm overly skeptic. I just question everything. I've been known to do that, and I've been accused of doing that. I question the questioner. But that's me, because my ultimate goal is to get down to the bottom, closest to the truth as possible. And then when I say closest to the truth, because we don't ever know what the truth is, we will never know what the truth is. All we can do is say, we think this based on this study, but again, it's not conclusive because we really don't know. And then here's a big one here, confirmation bias. You've probably heard of confirmation bias. Confirmation bias affects almost everybody. I mean, we see that in politics. We see the right, we see the left. They seek out like-minded news media to confirm their already existing irrational belief. But confirmation bias has an impact on experts as well. And the way it does that and how it affects experts is that confirmation bias basically leads experts to seek out information that aligns with their existing beliefs or hypothesis, potentially overlooking any data that might contradict their view. So they'll be out there seeking information that fits their narrative. That happens a lot. Look at these so-called unbiased studies. When we talk about, let's say, the impact of sugar on the human body, who's that study done by? Sometimes a soda or a candy company. Yeah, it's a little biased if you ask me. I'm not going to buy into that because they're trying to say sugar's good for you and buy more candy and eat more candy, kids and adults. I don't know about you, but I love sweets. I try to curb the sweets, but the candy and the ice cream, man, I love that stuff. And to me, it's a drug. I mean, they get you hooked, you're addicted to it, and you're like, oh, give me some more ice cream, give me some more candy. Pretty soon you're strewn out on the bed, passed out, because you're on your high's coming down. And another thing that confirmation bias plays into is that these experts, their interpretation can be influenced by their beliefs. I mean, they may interpret ambiguous or conflicting data in ways that supports their preconceptions, which basically skews their analysis and their conclusions. And cognitive biases in decision-making can lead to overconfidence in expert judgments. What this does is causes them to give undue weight to evidence that supports their belief and underweight evidence that does not. So what are we saying about all of this information? We're talking about approaching experts with caution, being skeptical, question their assumptions, evaluate their evidence, identify their biases, and understand that they are subject to confirmation bias just like you and I. Because if you, here's a little lesson for you. Why don't you go out or stay in, whatever you're doing. If you're driving, keep driving. But why don't you listen to the news? Listen to a right-wing news station and then listen to a left-wing news station. I'm talking a Republican, a Democrat, a MAGA, or whatever you want to call it, a progressive, whatever they call them nowadays. Listen to them. You'll see on the right, they're supporting right issues. And they're, people on the right are going, yes, that's right, I agree that. Oh, yeah, perfect, because they're feeding to that psyche. They're confirming what that person already has an assumption to believe. And it may not be true, but they're just buying into it. The same thing on the left. Oh, yeah, we got to let these people over the border and blah, blah, and whatever else is going on. Watch the news. Begin to listen to it critically like that. You'll begin to see that they're pandering to that audience. And confirmation bias is rampant on both sides. When we come back, we're going to discuss the limitations of expertises or experts, the limitations of experts. We're going to talk about some experts and the mistakes, their mishaps that they've done, as well as how to evaluate expert advice. And that's coming up. Okay, so far we've talked about cognitive biases and fallacies in expert opinions and advice, things that basically make them human like everyone else. Remember, experts are no different than you and I. They just have a little bit more education or a little bit more knowledge in a certain subject matter area. Sometimes a lot more information. I don't want to underplay or undermine experts by any stretch of the imagination. But again, the whole point is that they're human, that we've been sold this bill of good, that we should listen to experts, when in fact we should always be questioning experts and getting more information and diving deeper into what they're telling us to see if it's true or not. But there are limitations of expertise, and one of them is outdated information. Talk about the technology sector. I mean, information, AI, all that stuff changes rapidly, even in the medical field. What about food? How many times have you heard eggs are bad for you, eggs are good for you, eggs are bad for you, eggs are good for you? I don't even know where we stand with eggs anymore. But the bottom line is, you know, information is outdated. It gets restudied. New studies come in. Something else pops up. So you have to have an expert who's staying on top of this. So when I went to USC, I remember a university professor in the department, the industrial engineering department in which I worked for a few hours a week, was getting booted. And the reason why was because he wasn't publishing enough. Now, I understand that's probably a standard practice across many universities and colleges. And the point of that matter is, to publish, you have to do research. You have to understand and continue and stay on top of your field. And if you're not doing that, well, you're becoming outdated. And that is one of the challenges, the limitations of expertise is that information becomes outdated and they don't stay on top of that. So one of the things you want to do is question an expert. You know, even doctors. Doctors are not always up on top of stuff. They're doing the same old thing, saying the same old people month after month, day after day, week after week, whenever after whenever. And they're not always staying on top of their practice. Now, I'm sure that medical facilities require their doctors to take seminars or to stay on top of the research. And again, I can't say that with any certainty, but I'm assuming that I hope they do that. If not, then that's not very good. So basically, what I'm saying is experts need to be lifelong learners. They need to be in front of that computer or in front of that book or in front of that seminar and constantly learning new advancements in their field to stay on top of things. And again, we beat this up in the first part of our podcast, biases. Take into consideration a doctor. We're gonna play religion real quick. A doctor raised in an Islamic country comes to the United States where religion is basically free to practice whatever religion you want to believe in, but we mainly follow a Christian background for a lot of people, or we have values that are opposite of Islamic values. How do you think this doctor is going to react in a country where he was brought up Islamic, he is Islamic, and his beliefs are very conservative, and now he has to practice, or now he's chosen to practice in America, where our freedoms are much greater than they have, especially the freedom of women in this country, whereas they don't have that in a lot of those Islamic countries in the Middle East. That impacts the expert. His personal biases can influence his judgment and his decisions. I don't know what they're taught overseas, and again, I'm not saying that they're teaching them bad. I'm just saying that they come from different cultures, different ideologies, and those carry over biases. And that's the bottom line. That's what I'm just trying to thrust at you right now, is that other cultures, other religions, or all religions, they all carry their own set of standards for how life should be, how people should live their life. Well, when you take that, you mix that with another culture, another religion, another belief system, you might run into problems with bias on that doctor or on that mechanic or on that clergyman or on that teacher. So there's a lot to consider. So knowing where your educator comes from or your doctor comes from can help you when they give you an answer and you're not happy with that answer. You can simply go, I mean, don't go, oh, you're Islamic, so therefore your decision sucks. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying take into consideration their very conservative religious upbringing, if that's how they are. And that's all. And what about organizational interests? Take a look at the Supreme Court. Supreme Court is heavily weighted Republican versus Democrat. When they overturned Roe versus Wade, and again, I'm not a lawyer, I don't play one on a podcast, and I don't play one on TV, and I don't definitely play one in life, but it does have an impact on their decision, because for decades we didn't overturn Roe versus Wade, and all of a sudden you get a conservative Supreme Court in there, and it's their biases that interpret the law which overturns what we already had in place. So, folks, these are all things that come into play when experts give you advice. And I don't want you to be blindsided by this. I don't want you to realize, oh, wait a second, they know what they're talking about. No, question everything. Question everything from experts all the way on down. Well, you should question everything from non-experts. They just don't know what they're talking about, period. And then there's a limited scope of expertise. I mean, experts typically operate in niches, right? You know, the NASA expert, mission control specialist doesn't go out and operate on people. So there's limitations in expertise. They might be a scientist, but they can't talk about necessarily gemology, you know, or medical science in that effect. So don't let the doctor title or even the title of engineer sway you and make you think that, oh, they're an expert in everything that way. Let me give you another case in point. There was several years ago, maybe 10 years ago, there was a product on the market. And this product was called cortisol or something like that. What it basically did was block cortisol. It was supposed to. It didn't do that. It was a scam. But they would always reference the doctor. And I forget the doctor's name, but they'd always reference him. When you saw the direct mail piece, it said doctor, but it was a PhD doctor in sports science. It had nothing to do with health and fitness and diet. Well, fitness maybe a little bit on the sports side, but it had nothing to do with the human body and diet. It was very misleading, but they used the doctor title to to help sell this product, which they ended up getting sued for. So again, because you're a doctor in one thing doesn't make you knowledgeable in everything. So there is a limited scope of expertise. And don't forget about pressure from external forces or systems or policymakers. I mean, we see this a lot in the government. We see this a lot in law. We see this a lot with family members. And they're not even, I mean, they're experts in their own families. But we see pressure from external sources constantly. And you might feel this way yourself. You might be an expert in accounting, but you might feel the pressure from your boss to cook the books. I'm not saying you are, but I'm saying that pressure exists. Your boss might come up and say something like, hey, if we don't do that, you know, we may not have a company next week. And you're like, oh, how should I take that? So there's this pressure from external sources that plague experts as well. And then here's another one. Academia and practitioner are two different things. You can have an academic talk about marketing, for example, my field for the last 30 years. But if he's never been in the field, what does he actually know about being a practitioner, about being someone in the field that's actually applying these theories in education on marketing? They don't know much about that. They just go, this is the theory. This is how you basically market to this audience. This is what you need to do. But when you get into the mix and you're out there in the field, you realize, no, my 30 years says we don't do that because it doesn't work with this audience. So basically, some of these experts just rely on theoretical knowledge. And that's all it is. It's theoretical knowledge. It has no application in the practical world. It doesn't work sometimes. And so you can't go based on what they're saying if all they do is practice theory, basically academia, their academics. And this is something good to listen to when you're listening to the news. The news is a great place that brings in their quote-unquote expert advisors from all walks or from all different careers and industries. And yet, if they bring in someone heavily academic, they're giving you basically a lot of theory, folks. If they bring in someone that's strictly politics and they try to analyze something that's out of their realm, they're just guessing at it or giving their best knowledge of it. They don't really have the expertise in that. So again, the question comes up, why should you believe them? Why should you buy into it? There's a whole list of limitations for experts, you know, from information constraints, time constraints, you know, practical implications, strategies to manage bonded rationality. There's all kinds of things that get real complicated. What I want you to take away from all of this is that people that proclaim themselves experts or people that are experts proclaimed by some institutional piece of paper like a degree or experience are not infallible, okay? They are part of the human gene pool, and they too make mistakes, and they too need to be questioned. Okay, so I'm afraid to ask this question, but do you think experts make errors? Well, that's the whole point of the podcast, right? That they do, that they're human, that they're not some sort of god like in the sky that's been ordained by the universe, you know, and sent to us to save humanity. None of that exists. So we're going to talk about some of the statistical errors that have been made by experts so that I can drive this point further with you, that you understand that an expert is just another human being with a little bit more education that's injecting their theoretical understanding, their interpretation, or a whole host of other criteria that lead them to their decision that may or may not be correct. And I've already given you a couple stories about that. One was my father and the doctors. The other was the crisis communicators in Hawaii on the Hawaiian fire in 2023 on Maui. Did you know in the medical field, error rates in tissue diagnosis of cancer could be as high as 15%? It's very challenging in clinical diagnosis of malignancy. I mean, even in primary care, the solo practicing doctors in primary care, one in every 1,000 primary care visits results in a preventable harm. Now, while the number might not seem very high, the fact that it occurs should be disturbing to you. I mean, are you playing roulette with your life when you're not asking the questions? I think you are. I think you're rolling the dice sometimes and thinking, I'm going to be okay, when you might be that number one person out of the 1,000, or you might be part of the 15% of the misdiagnosed. And let's talk about forensic science. How many people are in prison that have been wrongly accused of the crime? I mean, research has found key areas within the forensic science associated with higher rates of wrongful convictions. I mean, this is forensic science, folks. I mean, with errors not only in identification or classification by forensic scientists, but also due to the incompetent or fraudulent examiners and their organizational deficiencies. It's not a secret. See, if someone says that they don't lie, if someone says that they're not mistaken, if someone says they have perfect memory, this is all BS. We're all guilty of all of that. Lying, being imperfect, you know, making up stuff, you name it. We try, most of us try to be good humans, but in the end, we are subject to bias and it does impact us. I mean, even in data science, the integrity of the data is questioned. I mean, take a look at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. They wanted to retract flawed studies after faulty data was discovered. I mean, you've done studies and now you're going to report these studies and then you realize, uh-oh, we goofed. I mean, how does that impact? Who does that impact? How does it impact? And they've done studies on spreadsheets called the spreadsheet errors. These studies report that nearly 9 out of 10 spreadsheets, that's 88%, folks, 88% contain errors, with the majority of these errors being basically avoidable, you know, and they're stemming from human errors. Take a look at the human errors in airplane crashes. That's a high number itself in making poor decisions. And these are experts flying planes. I mean, I don't see, you know, Bob, who just slammed a few beers at the bar waiting to get on his flight to Hoboken, New Jersey, take the cockpit, unless he's the pilot. And in that case, I hope he's not drinking any beers or anything. And if we take a look at human error rate tables, typical failure rates in business using common work practices range from 10 to 30 errors per 100 opportunities. People in business, we're talking executives, we're talking office workers. These are supposed to be professionals, experts in their field. And again, the error rates are high. So basically, these statistics and the studies, they demonstrate that errors among experts are basically widespread. You know, they're not just one or two people doing it in one or two places in one country or two countries. This is widespread across the globe, folks. Okay, folks, so this brings us to this segment of the podcast, and that is, how do we evaluate expert advice? We've talked a lot about how experts are like everyone else. They possess a little bit more knowledge, sometimes a lot more knowledge, but in the end, they're not perfect, and their decisions are not always sound. So how do we evaluate them when we're being told something by an expert? How do we decide that what they're telling us is actually the truth, and not because they're trying to mislead us? Maybe they're trying to manipulate us, or maybe they just don't know the information themselves, and they want to save face, so to speak. Or maybe they just don't stay up with the information. Or maybe they've just got a lot of personal biases involved in their decision-making process. Maybe it's cultural. Maybe it's personal. Maybe it's, you know, religious. I don't know. But I'm going to give you some tips on how to evaluate the expert. So the next time that you're out there and you're getting advice, in the back of your head, you should be going, let me research this. Let me find this out. Let me see if this is an actual truth. Let me get another opinion. And the first way to do that is to verify their credentials or their expertise. It's a very simple way. You know, if you go to a doctor, what medical school did they go to? Now, that's not going to make a big deal of difference, but it's going to help, because not all medical schools are created equal. And I'm not expecting you to know which ones are not, but at least verify the fact that they went to medical school. And in what country did they go to a medical school? And how much experience do they have? Are they out of residency and they just have a few years under their belt? Have they been doing it for 20, 30 years? If they've been doing it for 20, 30 years, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're good at what they're doing. They could be stale too. So these are things you want to evaluate. Seek a second opinion. If you're out at an auto mechanic and the guy says, you know, you take your car in and he says, oh, you need a water pump, a radiator, and a whole bunch of other things. Say, you know, that's really great. I'd like to take it down to this other mechanic down here and have him take a look at it. You may need three mechanics. Don't take it to your brother Bob's friend's uncle's neighbor who says he's a mechanic, okay? Well, I don't know. He might be a mechanic. You might take it to him first and then go get your advice on your second or third opinion. If someone gives you a source or someone gives you a study, evaluate that source. Who did the study? I mean, if it's a study on, like I said earlier, sugar, is it being sponsored and funded by a company that sells products that are made of sugar? I mean, if it is, it's heavily biased. They want to sell more sugar. So always evaluate the source and the references and understand the consensus. Is there an overwhelming consensus? I don't know that that's actually always the true thing, though, because if we take religion, you have a large consensus of people who believe in religion, regardless of the faith. it doesn't necessarily make it true because there's no scientific evidence to support that. And that's a whole different topic for a whole different podcast that we'll get into sometime in the future. But right now, what I'm saying is consensus, I don't know that I will 100% agree with that, that that's a good way to determine. But if you have a few people out there, just a few people saying, hey, you know, this new elixir works, and 99% of the people say, no, it doesn't, I probably would go with the 99% in this case. Religion is kind of divided. I mean, you got some on one side and others on the other side. So that's a whole different topic. We'll get into that later, like I said. Analyze the presentation, the information that you're gathering or that the expert is presenting to you. Are they presenting it, you know, as expert advice? Are they giving you to you in a very, you know, reliable, very chronological, systematic, organized fashion? Are they providing you with evidence for their claims? Are they walking you through how they came up with that conclusion? These are all things you want to ask and want to see if it's present when they're presenting to you. When they say many people, okay, well, what are these many people? Where's the study at? Oh, well, we don't have the study. It's just we know a lot of people. Well, I know a lot of people too. And so you probably know a lot of people too, but that doesn't mean that what they're saying is true. So you always want to analyze the presentation and the information. Check for conflicts of interest. You know, are they being supported? Are there financial incentives? For example, Chief Justice Clarence Thomas taking all those vacations and not reporting the payola. I mean, there's a conflict of interest right there. So if he's going to push an agenda or push or side with a bill or something, you never know, but chances are he could be a little biased because of the conflict of interest, because of he might side in the favor, and this is just a wild guess or an assumption and an example, but he could side with the people that support him financially when he's not reporting it. And folks, always check multiple sources. I mean, if information you're seeking is found in multiple credible sources, then the chances are you're probably on the right trail. The information is probably valid. Again, this is a gray area as well. However, you don't want to just go to one source and simply say, oh, I heard it from this source, it must be true. Again, that goes back to confirmation bias, and you're only seeking out to confirm what you already believe in. So you're not really getting to the bottom of the truth here or the information from the expert. You're just confirming what you already believe in. And again, that's fine if that's where you want to be, but don't call it the truth because it may not be the truth. It's just what you want to believe in. And I'm okay with that if that's all you want. But don't come out and say that's the absolute truth or that this expert's saying that and I believe him because that's the only source I listen to, because that's not true. Okay. Okay, folks, what did we learn today? What did we learn today? We learned that experts are no different than you and I with a little bit more knowledge in that subject matter area, and they are susceptible to all the cognitive rules in which everyone on this planet, every human being, is subject to. So with that, question the expert. Verify their source, their data. Understand their biases, if they have any. Were they practiced or studied, or the whole host of reasons I've given in this show. Inform yourself, empower yourself with knowledge, and don't just accept the advice that you're given because you're told and taught at a young age that experts know better, when in fact they probably don't, and they may just know a little bit more than you, and with a little bit more study, you'll probably become the expert to the expert in the end. And I encourage you to approach expert advice with informed skepticism and personal judgment. Question, as I've said. And if you have any key points, if you have any pointers, if you want to rebut what I'm saying, feel free. I'm open for discussion. I enjoy open-minded discussion. You can find me on my YouTube channel at Alan Stafford or my website. But if you want to do a dialogue, I would gravitate towards YouTube, where I have this podcast, but also this podcast can be heard on multiple stations across the globe. So if you liked what you heard, if you want to enlighten yourself more about the unnecessary scripts that were taught as kids to believe in adulthood, I encourage you to subscribe to my podcast on multiple platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Deezer, iHeartRadio, everywhere that you like to listen to podcasts. I'm Alan Stafford. I appreciate you listening to the show. And until next time, stay skeptical.